Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Fine. Thank you, George. I'm doing well. What about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm grateful to God. He has kept me. And it's great to be with you today. You know, I've been looking forward to having this opportunity to hear about your leadership story. So welcome to Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast.
Thank you very much, George, for the invitation and for the opportunity to come and share, I guess, my story of leadership and the journey that I'm still walking since a couple of years ago. So glad to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Yes, welcome. And maybe just to kick off the conversation, tell us just a little bit about yourself and some of the leadership responsibilities you've had.
Okay, as you've introduced again, my name is Nicanor Sabula. I'm married to a lady. Her name is Victoria Sabula. And we have three kids, a son and two daughters. Currently, the managing director of the African Association Management Company. We call ourselves AFAMCO. And AFAMCO is basically a management company that provides support services to membership associations and non-governmental organizations. And our support varies right from event management, business consulting, to advisory services to these membership organizations. So that's what I've been doing for the last 2 years, you know, since 2020. And how I got here is that my entire working life, I've worked in membership associations right from when I left the university, and I've been lucky to have been given quite a number of local and regional associations that I have led as a chief executive officer. So in 2020, I decided, why don't I branch out and see how I can support membership organizations and non-governmental organizations to become more effective and more efficient by offering them these very, very unique management services. So that's what I do, George.
Which are some of the other organizations that you led before you got to your current organization?
Oh, great. So basically, let me then explain my journey in association management. And I do this because I am in a very unique space, extremely unique space. I've looked around to see how many people do what I do, and there are a handful of us, actually on the continent. And I usually say it is most likely that I'm the first career professional association manager in Kenya. When I started out in this field, right after campus, I worked at the National Museums of Kenya. And it is while I was at the National Museums of Kenya that I was asked to join a newly established association that the National Museums of Kenya had helped find. And that was the African Society of Museums. I think we called it AFRICOM at that time. And because I was bilingual, I spoke French. They needed somebody that needed some additional skill to the job. I was seconded to that association to go and provide administrative services there. So that's how my association management journey began. And then from there, I think after about 2 years, I got an opportunity with the Association of Professional Societies in East Africa, APSA, which is a membership organization of mainly Kenyan professional bodies, right from the Law Society of Kenya, the lawyers, the Kenya Medical Association, the Architectural Association of Kenya, the Nurses Association of Kenya, the Kenya Institute of Management. So they've got an umbrella body. So I was taken there and asked to become a program officer. And believe you me or George, you know, I was on the job for about 6 months. And my then boss, whom we had been recruited together at the same time, left to go into politics, you know. So I got in, I think I remember in 2007, and 2007 that year, he left to go and run for a parliamentary seat. So the board then asked me to act in the position of the executive director of the organization at that time. I had never been in any senior leadership position. That actually was my first space. So I acted in the position for a period of about almost a year. And then when they began the recruitment process, I think I remember I went to the board and the board said, listen, why are we going through a recruitment process and this young man here has been acting in this position for the last, 1 year, and he's done exemplary well. Let's give him the job. So that's why I got the job. And I remember the chairman then telling me that, okay, we'll work with you, you know, to just be able to develop you because we haven't been in any leadership position. So I did that, and I did a stint of about 5 years and then left and went into another completely different field. The East Africa Association of Grant Makers. Again, this was an exciting, you know, space to be in at, because then I was going into the philanthropy world. So there I went and found, philanthropic organizations, you know, Safaricom foundations that were members, KCB Foundation, Chandaria Foundation, Kenya Community Development Foundation, KCDF. So they had created an umbrella body that was promoting local philanthropy and local giving in East Africa. So it cut across Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda. So completely a different field. I enjoyed promoting, you know, local philanthropy, talking about how we could mobilize local resources to support our local charity work. We helped establish quite a number of foundations when I was there, you know, Coop Bank foundations. So we were able to, you know, in addition to promoting the establishment of corporate foundations, we structured the alumni associations, helped create family foundations, you know, individuals that were wealthy that thought they needed to create a legacy for their family, and they came to us and we supported them to build their family foundations. And that was a very exciting journey for me as well. Again, I spent about 5 years there and left, you know, to go and explore. And this time I joined a trade association. And this was the Kenya Association of Travel Agents. If you look at it literally almost back, I started at the museum. So now I was managing, you know, the travel industry. I joined there as a CEO. Again, quite an exciting journey. I love tourism, and travel was very, very interesting to me. Yeah, and so I spent another 5 years, and I thought, whoa, I have gained this experience, and therefore let me go out and try and help other associations. Because while there, I had seen the challenge that many, you know, membership organizations were going through, you know, with leadership, with developing their strategies, with fundraising, with creating sustainable income and revenues, managing membership, you know, and all those things. And I thought, okay, I have helped this organization grow themselves, become very established. Why don't I go out there and help many more organizations that were struggling? So that's how I came to AFAMCO, and that's what I do to date, you know. So that has been my journey in managing associations.
My goodness. As you say, it's unique. You're the first career manager of association.
Yeah.
I've not to anyone else. And wow, it's great just to hear that a career can be built in associations, you know.
Yes.
Because you always get this idea, it's just volunteers, you know, it's just volunteers. But it seems it's your unique journey in that particular field. That's very interesting. But let's just go like back, Nick. And I know you were church mates and I've known you over a period of time. I know your wife. You know your wife was even a guest in our program, in our podcast. That was really great. And just you going back.
She was great.
She was great. You listened to her. You can confirm. Eh? Yeah. But really, it's a great honor to have a couple, you know, CEO. Both of you are CEOs and being guests on this podcast is a great, great honor. So thank you. Just going back, Nick, if you had to look at your life, where was the first leadership role or responsibility that you had?
You know, that's a very interesting question, George. You know, I've had people say, you know, leaders are born, others are dead. When I trace back, I actually began my leadership journey when I was very young. You know, I'm told I'm the guy that entered into the room, and when I started speaking, you know, people said, okay, you... So I remember when I left, when I was in primary school, you know, I left primary school. I was in primary school here in Nairobi. Then I went to Shags. I think I was in about class four. And believe me not, in my first year at the school, actually my first term, I was appointed a school prefect, which was weird, you know. At that time, I thought maybe they thought this Nairobi guy in Shads, it definitely would be the leader. So I was appointed a prefect right from class four in my primary school. And I was a prefect all the way to class eight, finished my primary school. I went to high school. And in high school, I was meant to be appointed a prefect, but something happened. That's a story for another day. But I was appointed to the student council. So I was our class counselor, you know, right in high school, and did a bit of stints, you know, just supporting teachers and the prefect body in high school. And then when I went to campus, I thought, oh, my campus was big. Campus politics was real, you know, real politique. And I always thought that campus was too big for me. So I wanted to be this quiet student that would do things, you know, quietly. But lo and behold, you know, I think I was, yeah, I mean, in first year, I think we had a class rep and somehow mid our semester, he was voted out and I was brought in as a class representative to represent my year group. And then in second year, I was appointed to the student council, not the main student body, but the student council as a faculty rep. So I was representing our entire faculty, you know, in what we call sort of like the campus parliament. So we sort of like had the student body, and then we had a student body that was sort of like the parliament. So I was elected to go and represent our faculty in that student parliament. And from there, I participated quite strongly in student leadership campaigns. You know, I campaigned for guys that became student leaders. So when I look at that and I say, I literally have walked the leadership journey. And then you can imagine when I leave campus, go to work, get a job, and within 6 months, actually, I rise from just a program officer to lead this organization that I just joined, you know, 6 months earlier. So when I track back, I can feel like my leadership journey has followed me through my life growing. I do a couple of other things. You know, I chair our estate association. You know, so basically, I think what I would say is that I've been lucky. I've gotten into a space, and the moment I start to make my contributions known, when they ask, who is going to lead this group? Many people say this guy, because I'm the guy that when I get into the room, I get to speak, I get to contribute, I get to give ideas. And somehow that wrongly gives I think, wrongly gives people the impression that this is a guy that has to be, you know, to lead the group. So many times I found myself being asked to, you know, lead my smaller groups in spaces where I participate, you know. So I can then therefore then say, they say that leaders are born, then I don't know, probably I'm one of those leaders that, you know, leadership just isn't me. And I get easily to find spaces to be asked to lead where leadership is required.
Wow. No, it's true. It's true. You know, it's very interesting, Nick. Even when you see kids playing, even kids, you're a parent, you know, you are in gathering. You always see one coming up as a leader, and he's the one who tells other kids what to do, what game to play, and all that. So it's just amazing how leadership can be seen even at a young age. So, Nick, for you, what's your leadership style?
If I was to say, you know, strictly looking at the leadership style, I'm a very democratic leader. You know, I allow people excel in their small spaces, and I'm lucky. I'm able to pick out, you know, people's strength, and then let them excel, you know, in their spaces. I think I can describe myself as a selfless leader. I have never felt threatened by anyone in a space where I lead. You know, saying that he will become a better leader than me if I let them do. So let me try and manage them. I am never intimidated by people that are better than me. And I feel like it also comes from a point of honest. I'm very honest with myself, you know, where I have inadequacies, I do admit, and actually look for people that are able to cover me in that inadequacy as a leader, you know, getting to admit that I am not excellent in this space. But then among the people that I work with, this one possesses the best skills and the best knowledge to be able to excel in that space. And I always say that when any of my team leaders succeed, I succeed, right? So for me, trust is very important. And I've discovered that when I've trusted people with responsibilities, they have reciprocated with loyalty, you know, because I trusted them, then they become loyal and they don't take advantage of that. I can also describe myself, you know, as a consensus builder. I think I'm the guy, when I get to the table, I'll listen to different diverse opinions and therefore be able to build consensus around an issue, you know. So that really helps me and also relieves me from the desire not to want to give. You know, I believe a lot in empowering leadership. You know, I look around and see people that I've worked with that are excelling, that have become better than me, then come back to me and say, you know, you really helped me. And that really warms my heart, you know. And that for me is a dividend that I get to reap from the way I lead, you know. So I can say, I lead with empathy. I'm the kind of a guy that sits down with people, get to hear how their families are doing, get to provide them advice, particularly when I sit and I've had the privilege of working with younger people, you know. So get to know how they are fun. So besides work, get to understand what are some of the social issues, what are some of the things that are going on, and where I can, I'm able to provide them, you know, with advice from the experience that I've had. So I think that's how I would describe really my leadership and where I've been. Yeah. And then what people, the teams that I've been in, have told me they felt about my leadership.
That's good to hear. So for you, and because you work with a lot of leaders in the associations, that you deal with, particularly in leading associations, what are the leadership qualities that will make an association succeed?
Leadership in association is a little bit unique. You know, associations are quasi-political institutions, because remember, you've got diverse interests that you're managing, quite a lot of egos, you know, in the room. And particularly when then you're dealing with elected leaders of associations, because these are people that are coming onto the board in their rightful position as leaders. You know, it could be So let me just give you an example. You're the CEO of Kenya Bankers Association, for instance. So you're dealing literally, your board members are literally CEOs of very successful entities in their own entity, or you're the CEO of the Law Society of Kenya, and you've got all these very successful legal practitioners running their own firm. So they're actually leading in their own space. Or you're running, for instance, the Kenya KEPSA, you know, the Kenya Private Sector Alliance. Basically, your board members are CEO of very successful blue chip companies, you know, if you may want to say. So it's a quasi political position that you have to be able to balance the political interests or the personal interests that these people bring on board. So that requires a lot of patience. Requires a lot of consensus building mind. You must be able to build consensus among these people. And you must also be able to be very firm, you know, as an association leader, because dealing with all these egos, if you're not very firm in the sort of like position you take, they can run over you, you know. And what I've seen in many cases in associations, you find that because an association brings together diverse entities, some of your members are most likely to be more successful than your organization that you run. You know, they're likely to be more successful in their own entity. So some of them may look at you and think, listen, you're running a very small organization compared to what I run, you know. But just reminding that being able to know that you hold the power as a collective, that's your bargaining chip, you know, that all of you are sitting at the center, and at this center, it is me who is looking at the center. So that gives you a lot of power and leverage, you know, as a leader. So what I can say really, what you have to be very keen is that you must be able to appreciate the need to negotiate. You must be a very good negotiator. You must always strive to be a consensus builder. And I guess that's how my consensus building has been built over a period of time, because I've had to be able to build consensus alongside competing interests. And I also think that you must also be a very honest person, you know, because people are going to trust you if they think that you're being honest in your undertaking, right? And you need that trust to be able to manage and balance all these things. And that's true to any membership organization. When you're being honest with your members, then they learn to trust you as an association leader, okay? So honesty is very, very, very important. But also you must be able to learn how do you treat each of your constituency with honor, dignity, and respect. And why do I say this? You know, definitely in any associations, there will be people that feel they are bigger than others. I think it's your job as the association leaders to remind them that when you sit on the table of the association, you're all equal. You know, you all carry that one vote, if that's the vote that you carry, and therefore, there's nothing like big and small member in an association. Yeah. Though behind you, you must also be able to recognize, you know, the 80-20 rule, where does the power vest? And be able to know how do you handle, you know, each of these constituencies best, again, on the clout and the power that they hold onto the success of the organization.
It's a real test of leadership.
It is. And people may not see it. I know sometimes people look at me and say, what do you do? But I tell them that my job is to manage egos. And so you can only manage egos again if you've been sharpened to be able to understand these dynamics. And that calls for quite some strong leadership. But again, you know, you also have to be a very visionary leader in terms of where you want to go. You know, because of the diverse interests that are usually at the table in an association, you need a very clear vision of where you want to take this organization, right? And ensure that what you're doing is harnessing all these diverse interests into that clear vision. So you must be a visionary yourself, and you must be able to clearly table that vision get the buy-in. And once you have the buy-in, ensure that you are shepherding everybody, you know, within the organization towards that that vision that you have for the organization. So that's also very key. And I always say, for you to be the leader, you must be very clear where you want to take people. And that is never true. It's more true in an association. Those are some of the traits or some of the qualities that you see around. And if you check around and see associations that have membership organizations that have succeeded in Kenya and across the country, you'll find that it's as a leader that has a very, very strong vision for the organization, but also at the same time, one that is capable and able to be able to convene the rest towards that particular vision.
And you know, earlier you talked about even helping alumni, and it's just very interesting that this weekend, Nick, we met a few of us. We kind of have kicked off our primary school alumni. It's amazing. We were nine of us in our first meeting after over 40 years. It was just interesting and just hearing stories and going back. Mm-hmm. And for us not trying to come together and be a bit cohesive, I'm also in one of our high school. I see these organizations or these alumni associations, though we were still quite loose, is how do we harness that synergy? How do we put things together? Because we are many of us, when we look at the school and when it was established, both my primary and my high school, it's many, many years. You know, went to both schools are some of these colonial schools, you know, that were started. Like my high school was started in 1929. My primary school, I think, was started in the 40s or in the 50s. So even you have old teachers and students who went back to UK, you know, yes. And in the country, like my high school has got a very strong association. So uh-huh. I know schools have started, you know, people are coming together. But from my experience and what I see from others is that we've not been able to capture that sense of association. I think we come together being Africans when somebody's parent has died or somebody needs a medical bill. And the spirit of Harambe kicks in and people really give and provide. So what would you speak into an alumni, you know, even for somebody who's listening and maybe is wondering, what do we need to do for a school alumni, you know, to be strong and to be more than just a welfare association?
John, the truth of the matter is that as Africans, we have not been successful in harnessing the power of associations. I will shock you. You know, a couple of years ago, I went to the USA and I went for a training in association management. And I was shocked that in the USA, they have associations for literally anything. Anything. And I was in Washington, D.C. You know, Washington, D.C. is a lobbying capital, you know, for the USA. And every serious association in the USA owns a building in Washington, D.C. And I was very shocked walking around and I saw a building, a tall building owned by the Pedestrians Association, people that walk on foot. Yeah, just to be able to give you lessons really about the power of association. And then they have a huge building, you know, in the middle of Washington, D.C., where they do their lobbying. So I think we've not been able to harness the power of associations quite effectively here in Africa. And it just goes to demonstrate what you're talking about. You talk about alumni association, and I must say that I'm happy to see how alumni associations are coming up, but they are still punching way below their weight in terms of the kind of change they can create. You know, you look at some of these loose alumni associations and the kind of money sometimes they're able to raise to support, you know, each other when people are bereaved. And then you begin to ask yourself, wait a minute. If this entity here was well organized, was well structured, what kind of a change would they create in our institutions? And truth be told, Some of us are very embarrassed by the schools we went to. And yet we are outside here. We are thriving. You know, we are managing organizations, big organizations. We are driving huge cars, staying in very comfortable houses, taking our children in very expensive schools. But when we look back to the schools we went to, you can't even tell anybody you went to that school. And I keep on saying that if as alumni, we organized ourselves and created very strong entities, we would in a sweep turn the face of our schools, you know, for those of us that went into public schools. I think alumni associations have failed because of that lack of cohesiveness in the creating of the associations. And it also doesn't help that because we go through schools in different phases, so you usually have find, you know, the class of 1999, class of 1998, class of 1987, class of blah, blah, blah. So we've been unable then to see how we bring all these diverse groups together for a common cause. And that's what associations need to do. And it just need a few of the successful individuals from those schools coming together and then begin to build a movement. Actually, associations are created by very few people, very few people in the room that look around and say, hey, what can we do? We have a common interest here. And then they begin to organize. They begin to convene. They begin to put together activities that are of mutual interest. And within time, they start recruiting people into that vision and sell that vision. And with no time, you've got these huge and successful organizations. So I think we need to step back and see how as schools, because schools have registers of their students, and you're able to pick and say, this was our student. So if I would start, I would start with the school management, sitting down, looking at their history books and beginning to bring just a few of these guys and involve them in the organization of the schools. And then from there, we begin to organize and build from that smaller group. You'll be surprised at what kind of resources we'll be able to mobilize, you know, to change the state of our schools. How we will be able to hold to account the people that actually manage some of those schools because of the power we have. And by doing so, we create the urge of those that are coming after us to want to continue to associate, you know, with a successful way. One of the things I found with associations is that people only want to associate with success. If you're not succeeding, no one is going to join you. But it just takes one or two people, you know, to be able to take that bold move and say, we're going to do this and be very consistent and persistent.
It's so true. You know, when you think of the, you know, when you read about some of the big universities in the U.S., it's alumni who have put up their endowment funds, you know.
Yes.
They have Harvards and all that. They have educated people, and those people are wealthy. So they're putting back, you know, money. Those kids have no problem of money. So even I'm thinking of our oldest university here in Kenya. They have educated. Yeah, the president got even a doctorate from there, you know, a new president. And all this, but you still find that they are having financial problems, and they have educated people in Kenya, you know.
The Kenyan economy is being driven by University of Nairobi graduates.
Yes.
Why? The university should be struggling.
That's it. You know, that's a question that really, we really need to seriously ask ourselves and be able to give back to those institutions and strengthen them so that even those behind will reap the benefit which made us who we are today, you know. So it's an interesting thing. Wow, but I'm really enjoying even just talking about leadership in associations, because that's a very unique thing, Nick, space. And thank you for sharing your wisdom.
I'm ready and willing to be able to work with groups and people that actually want to organize. It requires some special skill to be able to know how do you build consensus, how do you build a the staying power, how do you mobilize resources to support that? How do you build your vision? And also, we need to change also attitudes. I am the chairman of our primary school alumni. And I know sometimes when I try to push people towards development, people become very reluctant. But when you have a bereavement or people are fundraising for something, people have money. But when you want to build a school and equip a school, people start to hesitate. And that I'll tell you this, and then I think I need to share it here. Through that school alumni, we've managed, actually we are building an entire block in my former primary school, because I went to the school and I was very embarrassed. A couple of years ago, I went, the roof was falling, it was raining inside. And I told guys, listen, this is very embarrassing. So we started, mobilizing alumni of my primary school, and we building, I think, a story building, a two-story building with about six classes. So it's possible, to be able to. So it does require our leadership, but also we need to change our attitudes and begin to see these alumni, not just for welfare matters, but also for economic development, and that's going to add a lot of value to our countries.
Do we learn, and may we really embrace that, change our attitudes and engage in that, okay? So even as we move towards the end of this wonderful conversation that we're having, if you had to use a metaphor to describe yourself, what would it be?
I will describe myself as a tree that is slow to grow, but bears the best fruits. That's some of those trees that they grow very slowly, either other pears or some of these berries. They grow very slow. But the fruits are very sweet. And I say that because I think I exhibit a lot of patience in my leadership. Sometimes people think that I'm not being decisive in decision-making, but I've realized that sometimes you need patience to be able to realize the best out of people, And in my patience, I think I've also learned a lot of virtue as a person in terms of just realizing that every single individual has a best out of them. And so you require patience to be able to bring the best out of, the people. And then that requires patience,
Okay, no, thanks. And looking back at your leadership journey, what has been one of your greatest challenges?
I guess for me, the greatest challenge really has been organizations that have failed to distinguish between board roles and executive roles, and I see a lot of that interference and crossing of the lines in many of the organizations, particularly here in Africa, the board sometimes wanting to meddle into what the executive does, and that creates a conflict that in many occasions has resulted in lack of growth, of an organization. Because as a CEO, you want to hesitate, you don't know what the chairman will be thinking, what the chairman would agree or disagree with you. I think in one of those organizations, I encounter that challenge. But for me, it has been, if you give me an executive role, you must allow me to be able to execute. If you don't allow me to execute, then I have no business, to help you. As a board member, it has to be very clear you provide policy and guidance to the organization. And I execute, those policies that you create. So that for me has been a challenge. And sometimes when that has happened, you find that you've got conflicts on the board. And when there are conflicts on the board, I can assure you that that's a guarantee to fail as a leader.
Yeah. Legacy. What's your legacy?
I think my legacy is really to be able to build as many leaders as I can, and be able to prop up people, and be able to make people that never realize that they could, to make them realize that they can. Those that believe they could, to then believe that now they can. And I want to be remembered as that leader that trusted people with leadership responsibility, and they became, you know, some of the best leaders that are around. And for me, leadership is about making others better than you and never being afraid. I'm happy to be in the shadow of a great leader that I helped build, you know. So that's what I want to be reminded. That's what I want to be remembered for, that I helped to grow as many leaders around me as I could, you know.
Nice, wonderful story. And a final question is, what is the moral of your leadership story?
Leadership is a great responsibility. Leadership is God-given. And leadership is meant to achieve the best, you know, out of the people that you are allowed to lead. And leadership is a privilege. And therefore, when we sit into leadership positions, may we always remember it is never about us. It is about the people that we lead, right? So if the people that you lead become successful, then voila, it shall be written that here came a leader and changed the world. I guess that for me is a real essence of leadership. Yeah.
Wow, thank you. Well said, Nick. It's been a great, great joy listening to your unique space, you know, of associations, and you just telling us your journey. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best as you continue leading even these new associations here in Kenya of the Africa Management. You are leading that association of that kind, and wishing you all the best, and God bless you for coming. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. Once again, I feel very privileged to speak with you, and also for giving me an opportunity to just put together my leadership, you know, journey story. I've enjoyed the conversation as well, and I hope that people listening will find value, you know, in some of the things that I've had to share today. So thank you very much for the invitation.
Okay, then. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, BNG Consultants Limited and BNG Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.